Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Vavam and Bet by the two dots. Amar Rava, Tain Manele Ploni, give 100 zuz to so and so, Ve'ekadesh Ani Lecha, and then I will get married to you. Mikudeshet, it works. Why does it work? Midin Arev, from the same way that a guarantor works. Arev, by a guarantor, Lap Afad Gav Dolomati Hanadi Yadei, even though he himself personally is not getting any benefit, kamishabed nafshei, nevertheless, he encumbers himself and then becomes obligated to guarantee the loan. Hayita tanami. So too the woman over here, afagav delomate hanali yada, she's not in receipt of any of the monies, kamishabdo mikanyo nafsho. She still is encumbering herself or granting a kinyan of herself. So here where she instructs the individual to give the money to a third party, not to herself, even though she's not in receipt of the money, which normally would be the way that Kiddushin is created, is that she receives the money. Nevertheless, the Kiddushin work. Now there's some qualifications over here. Rashi, the first Rashi on the Amud says, Ukishinat Nolo, and when he gives the money to this third party, Amarla, he says to her, Hidkashili Mikudeshet. He still has to say to the woman that we are creating Kiddushin through this gifting or through this giving of the money to the third party. The Rashi makes it clear here that the necessity for the gifter or the person giving the money over here who's trying to create the Kiddushin to speak to the woman in order to generate the Kiddushin, in order to prevent the problem of what we saw in the previous Amudim, which is Natanhu v'amrahi, where he gave the money and she declared or created the Kiddushin. Because that's what it says over here. As far as the Gemara is concerned, it says, V'kadesh ani lecha, that she's the one generating the Kiddushin through the speaking over here. So Rashi makes that clear that that's not the case, that he also makes a declaration or an amirah of Kiddushin, and therefore it's Natan hu, V'amar hu. It's a case where he's giving the money and he's making the statement of Kiddushin. Just that the money is not going to the woman, it's going to a third party. And just like by an arev, it works, so too it works over here. By an arev, how does the arev obligate himself to become the guarantor of the loan? He wasn't involved. What did he do? What consideration did he get in order to encumber himself in that case? So the Tosfot Ri HaZaken says over here, by ana, dekam hemen le, Shenatan mimono l'acher, v'pneishu arev, gamir u'mishabed nafshe. This is one of the main ways that the Rishonim suggest that this works, is that the fact that the third party here, who is the guarantor, makes it possible for the loan to take place. The creditor would not believe the debtor, or the creditor would not extend credit to the debtor without the guarantee of the guarantor. What that means is that the guarantor is a person who is neman, believed by parties. He's able to generate believability or reliance in order for the creditor to extend credit to the debtor. And because of that, he then is getting hana'a, because his standing is what created the ability for the loan to be granted. And so that's hana'a that he gets from that standing. That's how he is meshabed nafshei. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is because the guarantor steps in, it's as if he received the loan and then he handed it over to the debtor. Not that he physically got the loan and then handed it over to the debtor, because then he might be equally encumbered as the debtor. The truth is, the creditor is only extending the loan because he's there. So it's as if he received the money and handed it to the debtor, because the creditor would not hand the money straight to the debtor without this party being there. But here where the guarantor, it's as if he got the money and handed it to the debtor, and that's how he is mishabit nafshei. And the same thing here by the woman. You could say either the fact that this individual listened to her and handed the money to a third party, that hanah that she gets, that he listened to her and gave the money to a third party, therefore she is mishabit nafsha, she grants herself into the kiddushin. Or you could argue the same way, that it's as if she received the money and gave it to the third party. It's if he, when he gave it to the third party, it was if he handed it to the woman and the woman handed it to the third party. Because if she doesn't grant kiddushin to this individual, she might be obligated to repay the money or to compensate this individual for giving the money to the third party. So for one of those two reasons, the same reason by Arev, by the woman applies as well, which is that she enters into kiddushin because of the hana'ah or the receipt of the monies, just like the Arev becomes a guarantor because of his hana'ah in his standing or because of the fact that he as if received the extension of the loan and then gave it over to the debtor. Helech maneh mitkashi leploni. Someone says to her, take this 100 zuz and then get married to so-and-so. Mikudeshet midin eved kanani. That works because it's just like an eved kanani. Eved kanani lav afagav delo kachaser velo midei kakani nafshei. In a case by an Eved Kenani, even though he gives up absolutely nothing, he gives nothing, he's still able to acquire his freedom, meaning that an Eved Kenani can go free if someone else comes in and pays for his freedom. If a third party comes to his adon, to his master, pays him to free the Eved lost nothing, gave up nothing, yet he's able to acquire himself. He's able to gain emancipation through that. So I gavranami, afagav delo chaser velo midei. So too the third party here, even though he paid absolutely nothing into the kiddushin, kakani la hayitita, he's still able to establish kiddushin with this woman. So Reuven wants to marry Leah. All of a sudden Shimon shows up and says, "Here, Leah, take this 100 zuz, and I want you to get married to Reuven." So Reuven gave up nothing. He entered no money into this transaction, yet it still works to generate kiddushin between him and the woman because someone else gave the money, meaning that Leah was in receipt of the money, and that's enough to generate kiddushin, similar to the Eved Kenani, where someone else can make the monetary payment, yet all the benefit accrues to the Eved Kenani. So to over here, someone else gave the woman the kiddushin, but all the benefit accrues to the party who wants to enter into the kiddushin. Rashi over here says, Helech maneh vidkashi leproni behu shlucho, that he is his shliach, that he appointed or he made this individual into his agent in order to do this on his behalf. Elesh mikashi mishalo. Just the only thing is that the shliach, instead of getting money from the mishaleach, from the one who is generating the kiddushin and sending him, he paid out of his own pocket. But he still was appointed by this individual to be a shliach, to be an agent on his behalf to generate the kiddushin. The way that the Gemara frames it is that he doesn't have to be out of pocket any expense over here, and he can still generate the kiddushin through making an agent who goes and is mikadesh on his behalf, but the agent loses the money and not him, and that works fine because of the same way that an Eved Kenani works. Now Rashi over here says that he must be a shliach. He must be an agent of the individual. Other Rishonim disagree and suggest that the agency doesn't have to be so formal in nature. It just has to be that he's happy with this or that he accepts what the individual is doing. Some go as far to say is that even after the fact, if he becomes aware of it and he says, yeah, I like that, then it might work as well. So Rashi believes that you have full-fledged agency up front, otherwise it doesn't work. Other Rishonim believe that you simply need him to be happy with the circumstance when the person goes to do it. You don't need formal agency. And then some Rishonim are even more makil, which is even after the fact, if he's happy with what had happened or transpired, that's enough. And to enter into the kiddushin or create the kiddushin over here. Ten maneh leploni, ve'ekadesh anilo, to give 100 zuz to so-and-so, and I will get married to him. Mikudeshet midin shnehem. Then that works because of the two dinim that we just explained, which is Arev, lav avagav delo kamati anali yodei, the guarantor, even though he is not in receipt, he's not the one getting the benefit, kamishabid nafshei, he still enters himself into the fray, becomes a guarantor to the loan. Hayitatanami, so to this woman, avagav delo mati anali yada, she's not the recipient of the kesef kiddushin, kamakanya nafsha. Nevertheless, she gives herself over to the kiddushin, because she said over here, ten maneh leploni, give the money to so-and-so. Through that hana'ah that she was listened to, or the fact that now she's basically saying pay that money, and if she doesn't give up herself, she's going to have to repay that money. One of those two, she now enters herself into the Kiddushin. What you're noting is true, which is the way that the Gemara formulates it, is that she says to Shimon, give 100 zuz to Reuven, and then I'll get married to him. The truth is, she could say, give 100 zuz to Levi, and I'll marry Reuven. Recipient of the money does not have to be the party that she actually marries. It could be independent of who receives the money. You could have actually three different parties involved. You can have the person she's instructing to give the money to someone else, and then she agrees to marry a third party. Nothing to do with the two parties with the money. That's because, again, like the guarantor, who has nothing to do with the creditor or the debtor, he still guarantees the loan for one of the two reasons that we spoke about before. So to over here, the woman will engage herself into Kiddushin despite the fact that she is not the recipient of the money. And we'll see in a second, even though the party who is engaging with her is also not the one who is giving up the money. So me dummy, arev, haida kakonile, kachaser memona. Over there, at least, the one who is entering himself into the fray loses money. Hi, gavro, kakonila, hi, itata, velo kachaser velo mide. This guy's entering into the fray and he loses nothing. He's out of pocket, absolutely nothing. Evid kanani yochiach. Then we'll bring in evid kanani. The loka chaser mamona. He loses absolutely no money. And again, he gains his own freedom. He's able to acquire himself, despite the fact that he paid nothing out of pocket. Me, Tommy. How can you compare it to the case of Evid Kanani? Hatam hach de kamakni kakoni. The one who is granting the Evid Kanani his rights is in receipt of the money. The adon is getting paid, and that's why he's letting the Evid Kanani go free. Over here, the woman is granting herself into the Kiddushim. And she's receiving absolutely nothing. Arev yochiach. So Arev will show you that that's okay. Even though he's not in receipt of anything, he's not getting an hana. Nevertheless, he enters himself in and guarantees the loan. So what you see here is if you put the two pieces together, which is Arev tells you that the individual doesn't have to be in receipt of anything in order to put himself in and obligate himself in the situation. Number two is, Evid Kanani teaches you that the person generating the Kiddushin does not need to be out of pocket any money. And so that's what happens over here. Reuven is getting engaged halachically to Leah. So Reuven, and here Rashi again says the same thing that he said before, which is, Va'amar law. And he, Reuven says to Leah, we're married with this transaction that takes place, because otherwise you have a problem of Amrahi again, but she's instructing the other party to give the money. So again, he says, Reuven says to Leah, with everything that is transpiring here, I am a Kadesh Yu, and she accepts that. She instructed Shimon, who has nothing to do with her, to give money. Again, whether she gives that money to Reuven or whether he gives the money to Levi, it doesn't really matter. So, here you have a situation in which Reuven gave or lost out of pocket absolutely nothing, yet he's able to acquire Leah, just like an Evid Kanani can acquire himself without being out of pocket anything. Leah enters into the Kiddushin and is Mishabed Nafsha to the Kiddushin, even though she's in receipt of absolutely nothing, just like an Arev puts himself in the position to guarantee and be out of pocket money, even though he never was in receipt of anything. If you combine the dinim, you could have a situation in which Reuven gave absolutely nothing, Leah received absolutely nothing, yet there is Kiddushin generated between them because the woman said to Shimon, pay 100 zuz, either to Reuven or to Levi, whatever it is that she does, and that's carried out. And for the same reasons that Arev works by itself, and Evid Kanani works by itself, if you combine them together, you can have a situation in which the two parties who are getting married are exchanging absolutely nothing. The man is granting nothing, the woman is in receipt of nothing, and yet they're able to get married or have kiddushin based on these two factors. Take this maneh, and I will get married to you. Mahu. This is a case where the woman hands the money to the husband, and then ekedesh ani lecha, and then I will get married to you. So now this sounds like a classic case of not nahi, ve'amrahi. which we know doesn't work, that we already established in the previous dapim. Wow. So why is Rav asking the question? So Rashi already clarifies once again here. V'amar la itkachi li b'kach. So he responds, and he says that we're going to get married through this. So first of all, we get rid of the problem of Amrahi, because Rashi says, Amar hu, that he actually says something over here. But what is, or how is this working, or how is this different than what we said before, where Natnahi, V'amar hu, where it was a machloket, whether that was a safek, or whether it was not kedushin at all. The Gemara didn't address that case. So why is it a question over here? Amar zuchmesh made the Rav Papa mikudeshet. That works. Va marle Rav Ashi the marzutra imkain havelei nechasim sheish lem achrayut niknim nechasim sheein lem achrayut. Basically, what he suggests over here is the way that the transaction is happening or being engendered is not that she is suggesting that the payment is not nahi, but rather his acquisition of the money, she comes along as a party with that. What we have is something called the kinyan agav, which is what the Gemara is discussing over here, is sometimes you're able to make a kinyan on one object, and along with that comes other objects. So the classic case of kinyan agav, which we're going to see in 1 second, is if you sell property to an individual, and there are also mitaltalim as part of the transaction. When you acquire the karka, you get a kinyan agav, which is agav the karka. Along with the karka, the mitaltalim are then included in the kinyan. So you simply make a kinyan on the karka, and that can bring along with it all the other objects as a kinyan agav. So what she's doing over here is the same thing. She's saying, give me the money, and saying, take possession of this money. And with the taking of possession of this money, I also come along. I'm also a part of that kinyan. And that's how they generate the kiddushin. She's handing him something. He's making a kinyan on that object. When he makes the kinyan on the object, he's not only making a kinyan on the object, he's also making a kinyan on the woman. So it's not the money itself that is generating, it's not the he that's generating the kiddushin, but rather the acquisition, the kinyan on the money is also effective for making the kinyan on the woman. That's the suggestion of how it's working over here. The Gemara will reject this in a second. But the conclusion from that is that you can now take metaltalin or kesef and you can acquire an object, and through the acquisition of that object, you can now take what's called nechasim sheish lem achrayut. We're going to see in an upcoming Mishnah in Kiddushin that Nechasim Sheyesh Lahem Achrayut is property that has recourse associated with it, which generally refers to real estate or real property. So real property, karka, is something that's Nechasim Sheyesh Lahem Achrayut. It's something that has recourse because that's the way it's generally sold, and that's the nature of the transaction. On the other hand, Nechasim Sheyesh Lahem Achrayut is property that is not real property. It's metaltalin. It's movable objects who generally are not sold with recourse. And the way that a kinyan agav usually works is that you acquire the real property, and then the non-real property comes along with it. What you have here is just the opposite. The acquisition's on the non-real property, which is the money, and then the real property, which is the woman, comes along with it. Now, why is the woman real property? So Rashi says over here, Adam hu kash l'karkot. An individual, there's a hekesh between individuals and land. Now, that's true, and as Rashi notes it over here, because it says in Vayikra Chavhei, sorry man, an Eved Kenani, v'nichaltem otam l'reshet achuza, that you can pass them like property to your children. An Eved Kenani has the same din as property, as karka. It's hu kash l'karkot. And they actually treat it like karka, like property, but they have a din like real property. So what Rashi says is, from there you see that people are like real property. Tosafot says, I don't understand what you're saying, Rashi. That's true by an Eved Kenani. That's not true in general. People in general are not hukash the karkaot. We're just an Eved Kenani that is. And he has a lot of difficulty with it. Ela v'nira, that Tosafot says, lav davko. Doesn't mean literally that a person is considered to be real property, but rather, Af kinami ein lehem achrayut lo sinu metaltin niknin agav metaltin din echasin she ein lehem achrayut lo shayach behu agav. So Tosafot says, don't take it so literally. Doesn't mean that you're using non-real property to acquire real property. Truth is, it's non-real property trying to acquire non-real property. But the same problem exists because we don't have a kinyan agav like that. We never find a kinyan agav where you acquire non-real property and along with it comes more non-real property. That kinyan doesn't exist. That's one way Tosafot answers it. Inami, he says, יש לומר דאחי כמר, הכוח כי אי אישה נקנית אגב מטלטלים, שדה נמי נקנה אגב מטלטלים. Tosfot says is that we could extrapolate the din then. If a woman can be acquired by the acquisition of metaltalin, that would mean that a field could also be acquired in that way. You take a kinyan of metaltalin, and then the field will come along with it. Because the whole way that we learn out kiddushe yisha is from stay afrom, from a sadeh. We learn out the paradigm of kinyan that tells us that kesef works by a woman is sadeh. So if you say now that the acquiring of the woman can work in such a manner, that means also the acquisition of a sadeh should work in that same manner. That's the second answer that Tosafot gives, that we're not really talking about real property. It's just because we have this equivalence that's drawn between sadeh and isha, so she looks like real property. If it works here by her, it's also going to work by a sadeh, which is real property. That second answer in Tosafot is a little more difficult, based on the Tosafot that we saw back on Daf Gimun Aleph, who says that the limud from Stei Ephron is not a complete limud, to say that there is an equation of equivalence between Sadeh and Isha, because over there it tells us what it says, Kinyan Chazaka doesn't work by a woman, even though it works by a Sadeh, and therefore all he says is the only thing we learn out of Sadeh is Kesef, that the fact that Kesef works as a Kinyan over here, not to say that she and Sadeh are exactly equal. Over here this Tosafot sounds more along the lines that, no, they would be actually equal. Could argue here that it's unique within the world of Kesef. It's just saying that if Kesef works over here, when you make a Kinyan on the Kesef, that the woman comes along, then the same should be true by a Sadeh. If you make a Kinyan on the Kesef, then the field could come along, and you could narrow the scope of the Chiddush over here in Tosafot, and then say maybe it still fits in with the Tosafot back on Gimel and Aleph. But either way, you have a problem over here, which is that you have a Kinyan Agav that we've never seen before. So Gemara says, and we are going to learn in a Mishnah upcoming in Kiddushin, Nichasim She'ein Lehem Achrayut, property that has no recourse, meaning non-real property, nicknim im nechasim sheyesh lehem chakrayut, are able to be acquired along with property that has recourse, or real property, bekesef b'shtar b'chazakah. The means for such a kinyan are either money, you can pay for a field and acquire it, shtar, you can give a document that creates the acquisition, or chazakah, you exert control over the property, which Rashi brings down the examples that the Gemara talks about, which is Na'al Gadar Uparatz. Either he locks up the place, he breaks down a fence, or he walks around it. Things that are considered to be active or exerting of ownership over the property, those are the three main means of Kinyan on real property. But the only thing the Mishnah says is that real property works as with a Kinyan Agav for non-real property. The opposite way around, we don't find such a thing. So how's it working over here? Samalei, misavaret amra le agav. Where did you ever see the word agav over here? You think this transaction's working because she says, listen, you acquire the money, and agav acquiring the money, you also get me. Who says it's working like that? Hocha badam chashuv askinan. We mentioned this example before. Here we're talking about a very important person who's in receipt of the money. Debayana, de kabo matana mina. Because he accepts the gift from her, that hana'a gamra omakanya le nafsha. She then gives herself over to him. Meaning that sometimes when you give a gift, the grantor of the gift is not the one generating the hana'a for the other party, but it's the other way around. The gifter is the one who is actually receiving the hana'a because the recipient of the gift is so important or so special. The fact that they accept the gift gives you a certain amount of hana'ah. That means if you went to the prime minister's office and you present him with a gift and he accepts it, that may be not even that the prime minister is getting hana'ah, but you're getting hana'ah because the fact that the prime minister gave you an audience and accepted the gift, that itself was a hana'ah for you. And that's how the kinyan is taking place over here. Hidmar nami mishmei derova. And there we have a member of Amorim said over the name of Rava, v'chein le'inyan memona, that this works in monetary matters as well, which is that Hanach Shmaita de Rava, these memrot of Rava. Now Rava here, we had three different memrot from Rava. We had the first memrot from Rava, which is that a rave, or the concept of a rave works here. Second memrot from Rava, that the concept of Evid Kanani works here. And the third case where Rava is bite. He asked the question, and then the answer was that it works, and then we found out how it works over here. So what the Chen Inyo Mamona is referencing the first two statements of Rava, and that's what Rashi says over here, that we learned out Kiddushin from Din Arev and Din Eved Kanani. The same thing would work in a transactional nature. If someone says to a third party, give money to so-and-so, and then you can acquire this field, that would work. The same way that it works by kiddushin, it also works by transactions. That you can, even though you never received person giving up the property never received anything, or the person acquiring the property never gave anything. In those cases, they can still acquire the property from the owner of the property. So the same way it works by kiddushin, where even though third parties are involved, either with the payment or the receipt of the payment, nevertheless, it can still work here to acquire the land. It's richa, you need both of them. Tiyashmin in kiddushin, if you only talk to me about kiddushin, mishum ta'a itata, nechala b'chodohu, because this woman doesn't need to get such grandiose hana'a or benefit in this situation. Any benefit to her, she will enter herself into marriage, k'dereish lakish, because of the member of Reish Lakish, Dama Reish Lakish, Tav, the Meitav, Tan, Do, Milameitav, Armalo, that it's better to be two bodies than to sit all alone. Or, in essence, companionship is so important or so valuable that a woman will basically accept anybody or any husband because she'd rather be married than not married. Marriage is such an important social standing for the woman. It's so important to her sanity, quote unquote, because she wants companionship that she is willing to, in a sense, lower her standards or enter herself into marriage for the smallest amount of hana'ah because that is so important to her that she end up in a married position. Again, this is a premise that is used many places in the Gemara that women will either stay in marriages or enter into marriages because companionship and being in a marriage is so important that they'd rather be in the marriage than not be in the marriage. Aval mimona, emalo. But in transactions where we don't have that impetus, maybe it wouldn't work. V'yashmina mimona, if you told me that it works by transactions, v'shum diyatiyayiv l'mechila. That's because over there, people can forgive. That you could actually give the field to the other person as a matana, as a gift. And that you don't have to receive money. You could forgive the owing of the money or the necessity to pay for this object, because mamon or obligations can be subject to mechila. About kiddushin, by kiddushin, mechila is not relevant. Forgiveness is not one of the methods by which you can have kiddushin, but rather aim alot. There you would say it doesn't work. Tzricha, therefore I told you that it works by kiddushin, it works by transactions, and each one of them, arev and eved kanani, can be a paradigm by which the transaction can take place, even though the acquirer is paying out absolutely nothing. Or that the granting of the acquisition, or the party granting the acquisition, is not in receipt of anything, still the transaction can take place. Okay, Amar Rava. So here we have more memorot from Rava. Hidkashi li l'chetziyai mikudeshet. If he says to her, marry half of me, it works. Chetziyech mikudeshet li, half of you is married to me, eina mikudeshet. Then it doesn't work. So in the case where the husband proposes that half of him will marry her, that works. In the case where he proposes that half of her will marry him, there it doesn't work. Amrle Abaye l'Rava, Maishna chetziyech mikudeshet li, deina mikudeshet. How come when he says, half of you, the woman, will marry me, it doesn't work? Isha amar rachmana v'lo chatzi isha. The reason is because the Torah says, ki kach ish isha. And you're telling me it means an isha, a full woman, and not half a woman. So hachanami ish, ki kach ish, isha, amar rachmanav lo chatzi ish. If that's the drasha, then they should have to both equally be a full party to the kiddushin. Avalei hachi ashta, Rava says back to him, what are you talking about? There's no comparison between the cases here. Hotam itata lebeitre lo chazio. This we saw back in the Gemara in Gittin, that a woman can only marry one man. She can't marry two parties. So therefore, when he says, I am going to marry, or half of you is married to me, that doesn't work, because what that means is that he's left the other half for someone else to marry or to generate kiddushin, and that's impossible. So a woman can't have kiddushin with two parties. On the other hand, alagavra, miko kachazi the beitrei. On the other hand, when it comes to the man, if he says that half of me is married to you, what he's saying to the woman is that I may take another wife besides you. And that he's allowed to do. I mean, the Torah allows for bigamy. And therefore, the husband is not doing something, anything that implies a possibility or an opportunity that is not open to him. If he He says half of me is married to you. He's just saying to you, be aware that the other half of me might actually marry another woman. And that's totally fine. V'achi kamala. And this is what he's saying to it. Divina b'minsa v'achrina nesivna. If I want to take another wife, I may take another wife. Now, it's interesting because by the time we get to the early Middle Ages, many of the ketubot have written into them, especially in the Sephardic countries, that the individual will not take another wife as long as he's married to this individual. So even though it's totally permitted, and those communities were not governed by the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom, nevertheless, that many times they were aware of the problems of multiple wives, or taking a second wife, or this wife wanted to be ensure that the other individual didn't take a wife, and therefore they wrote into the ketubah that as long as I'm married to this individual, I will not take another wife. And so over here, that's exactly what he's declaring to her up front, that I'm not bound by anything. I might actually take another wife over here. Obviously, this is the time of the Amoraim. It's not associated with that writing of the ketubah, but it's just a declaration up front saying, I have entitlement, and I want you to be aware, because the way that I'm creating the Kiddushin, it's making it clear to you that I might take, or I probably will take another wife. You're right. He's not obligated to tell her this. That's the message that comes from here, and that she should be aware of that. Amalei marzutra brei de Rav Mari, the Ravina. Benifshetu la kiddushei bikula. Why doesn't the Kiddushin spread to the entirety of her? In that when he says to her, half of you is married to me, why doesn't that mean, instead of saying, okay, you can't marry half of her, because that means that someone else can marry the other half. So instead of saying it, just say that the Kiddushin spread and encompass the entirety of the woman. Milo Tanya, don't we have a braita? Omer raglaz zelzo ola, says about an animal, this leg of this animal is an ola. Teikula ola. Then the whole thing becomes an ola. You can't just make the leg of the animal ola, it spreads to the rest of the animal and the entire animal becomes an ola. There is an Amanda Amar who says, like you're suggesting, that the Dushat Ola on the leg does not spread to the rest of the animal. But what you have to do is then you sell the animal to be used as a Qurban Ola, with the exception of the leg. You don't sell the leg, you don't charge him for the leg, and therefore he buys it and he puts the rest of the animal on as an Ola, minus the leg. But then he has an Ola, and you have your leg get on the Mizbech like an Ola. But that individual says it doesn't spread to the rest of it. That's only because he was makdish, a part of the animal, which is not vital to its survival. If he, for instance, said chetzi of the animal is kadosh, then it would spread the remainder of the animal, because you can't subdivide the animal in that. That piece of the animal can't be taken off. So do over here. When you say half the woman should be nitkadeshet, that's something shanishamat fuyaba. Why doesn't the kiddushin spread? Tosafot over here asks, wait a minute. The whole din by hektesh is a unique din by hektesh. It's a din that we learn out of a pasuk by hektesh that if you're makdish a portion, it spreads to the remainder. Why then would you then apply it over here? Why does it have any application? We don't have any pasuk that indicates that it's going to spread. So Tosafot says, like Rashi mentions over here, that the reason that it works over here is because he used the term kiddushin. He was mikadesh the isha. And therefore it works like hektesh. So Tosafot says, Rashi doesn't mean dafko, that it becomes like hektesh, but the lashon of hektesh, as we saw earlier, what does kiddushin, or why do we use the lashon kiddushin to generate the halachic engagement, is because, just like by hektesh, it becomes a sur lakol, so too, this woman becomes a surah lakol when you do it. So Tosafot says, it's unique to the language of makdish. Hariat nikudeshet li. On the other hand, if you use another language, you say hariat nuresset li. Hariat li li in two, which are good languages for generating halakhic engagement, this question would not exist. This question is unique to the fact that you use the lashon kiddushin over here. And so since you use the lashon kiddushin, we're going to say, why doesn't it function like hekdesh? So again, Tosafot says it's not a din in marriage, it's a din in the lashon of kiddushin, which is equated to hektesh. And that's why the Gemara wants to know, why doesn't it work over here? So Gemara says, midami, two cases are not similar. Hotam behema, hocha dat acheret. Wait a minute, over there, the animal is not a thinking object, it has no decision making or ownership over itself. It's simply whatever is imposed upon it by its owner. So if the owner puts hekdesh on half of it, the other half of the animal automatically becomes hekdesh because the animal has no way to refuse that or no way to say, no, it's only half. I'm only giving up half of myself. He can't say anything. It's whatever the adon does. He's the owner of the animal. So the owner places it on half, it spreads the other half because he's the owner of the other half. By the woman, that's not the case. The woman is a thinking person, owner of herself, and she can say, I give up half of myself. I don't give up the other half of myself. And that's data cheret that is here, Rashi calls it. She is chashuva kemoto. She is a peer to the man in this case, where she's an equal party to the kiddushin. The kiddushin here is not simply the man takes the woman. It's a case where the man offers the woman the chance for kiddushin, and she has to accept it, and she becomes an equal partner here. It's interesting that Rashi formulates it as chashuva kemoto, that she's on parity with the husband over here. Because, again, we know that the Ran in Nedarim, when he formulates the nature of Kiddushin, says that the woman just has to say that she's not blocking or not stopping the Kiddushin. She's not really an active participant in the Kiddushin. She just takes away the impediment to the Kiddushin going through, which is she says yes. And then, therefore, the Kiddushin happens. All the action happens from the side of the man. The woman is a passive party completely and has nothing to do with it. She just removes an impediment. Over here, Rashi formulates it that she is chashuva kemoto, that she's on parity with the man, and she's an equal partner to the kiddushin. Again, that gives you the two ends of the spectrum with regards to how actively involved the woman is in the kiddushin. She can be considered an equal partner. According to the Ran, she can be just a party to the kiddushin by removing impediments, but she's not really an active or equal partner in the kiddushin. Which, whatever reason it is, you can't just say it automatically spreads to the other half of the woman. Where it says, Alo dami, alo laha. It's more comparable or similar to this case. Dami Rav Yochanan be'ima shel shnei shutafim. You have an animal that's owned by two partners. Hikdish chetzia. If you're makdish half the animal, the half that you own, then it doesn't automatically spread to the other half of the animal because there's an owner or a different owner on the other half. That's the same thing by the woman. You now have, quote unquote, ownership on half the woman. The other half is owned by her. It doesn't spread to the other half. Similar to this case. Chazar v'lakchai v'gdisha. If you go then and buy the other half from your partner, and then makdishit to kadosha v'ena kreva, then it's kadosh, but it cannot be put on the mizbeach. Voset tmura, and it creates a tmura. If you try to exchange this animal for another animal, then it remains kadosh, and it passes the kedusha to the other animal. Utmurota kiyotzeba. And the exchanged animal, which becomes kadosh, has the same status as it, which is it can't go on the mizbeach. It's kadosh kedushat damim, but not kedushat guf. And that's why Tosafot over here says this is the reason why the Gemara gave the example where he buys the other half and is mikadeshit rather than the partner is mikadesh the other half. You could create the same situation where he's makdish his half and the other partner is makdish his half of it and you would have a whole animal that's kadosh. The reason we don't do that is because there's no tmura then, because there's no tmura by shutafin. Partners can't have tmura or can't create tmura. So to have the case work by tmura as well, it has to be that he buys out his other partner, and then his makdish, the other half, because now the whole animal is owned by him, he can create tmura. But the kedusha of that animal is only a kedusha tamim, shma mina tzvat. From this you will conclude three things. Shma mina, balei chayim nidachim. Live animals can be pushed out of reaching the status of kedusha taguf. Shma mina, dichui, mi kara b'dichui. You can have a situation in which an item never becomes ra'ui to get on the mizbeach. The other thing is that even when you are only kadosh, you can still have dichui. Dichui is a concept by which an item is no longer ra'ui to go on the mizbeach. It was something that might have ended up on the mizbeach. An animal here could have been a kosher korban, could have ended up on the mizbeach, but something happened here that now prevents it from ending up in the mizbeach. That prevention or that item is called dichui. So now here you have three levels or three aspects of dichui, which are argued in the Gemara. And here we say, Shema Mina, from here you conclude these three things. Number one is that balei chayim nidachim. You would have thought possibly that as long as an animal is alive, even if things happen to the animal in the interim that disqualify it from getting on the mizbeach, maybe afterwards it could get on the mizbeach once it becomes qualified again. As long as it's alive, it doesn't lose its status or ability to end up in his bath. And as Rashi notes over here, there's a mandalmar that it only applies by shchutim. Dichoy, or disqualification of the mizbeach, is only relevant by something that's already shechted. And then it disqualified to get on the mizbeach. And even though it requalifies later on, That doesn't mean that you can put it on his back. But a live animal will never get disqualified. What you see from here is a live animal is being disqualified. He and his partner own the animal. It's a live animal. And yet it's being disqualified from going to Mizbech. And we say, Eina kreva. Doesn't end up in the Mizbech. That's number one. There are times where animals are disqualified temporarily. So this could have been a temporary disqualification. The temporary disqualification is that he didn't have ownership on the other half. He only had ownership on half of it. So when he's makdishit, that animal can't go on the Mizbech because the other half is still problematic. But maybe when he acquired the other half, he brings it back into a qualified state. Because originally it was qualified to go on the Mizbech. If they both agreed to be makdishit, it would work. But he went ahead and was makdish his half, and the other half remained chulin. So now he disqualified it from the Mizbech because it's a half an animal. Half an animal doesn't go on the Mizbech. When he buys in the other half, you could have claimed that it requalifies the animal to go on the Mizbech. But we see that doesn't happen. Since it doesn't happen, that shows you that balei chayim, live animals, can be disqualified. And once they've been disqualified, even though they requalify later, they're done. Once they've disqualified for a temporary period, they're off and you cannot put them in Zveach at all. That's number one. That's exactly the conclusion. The Gemara is saying, since it doesn't requalify, it proves to you that that temporary disqualification, even by a live animal, is enough to say you can't go on the Zveach anymore. Number two is, over here, this animal never qualified to go on the Mizbech. It never was qualified to go on the Mizbech because of the partnership, and it was makdish half of it. It never ever was qualified. Yet, we're disqualifying it from going on the Mizbech. Because there's a sheet that was called venire venidche, that only an animal that was once qualified and then became disqualified is permanently disqualified from the Mizbech. But if you never became qualified, and you're disqualified from the get-go, maybe that's not a disqualification that would remove you from the Mizbech, because you never were ready to go to the Mizbech, and then it stopped. You just never got to the point where you were ready to the Mizbech. So maybe once you become qualified after that, that's your first chance at the Mizbech, that should work. From here we see that's not the case. Because here, from the moment it started, and he was makdish half of it, it was not ready to go on the Mizbech. It was disqualified immediately from going on the Mizbech. Yet we still say that's a disqualification that is permanent in nature. But also, yesh tichui b'damim is the fact that in the beginning, you were makdishit for its monetary value. You weren't makdishit to go on the Mizbeach. You were makdishit as an olah. But of course, you can't be makdish the whole animal, only half the animal. If you do that, you know all you're doing is being makdishit for its monetary value, not for the animal itself to go on the Mizbeach. Yet that still is considered to be a disqualification. Even though you never entered the world of Kedushat HaGuf, you were never makdishit for its inherent getting on the Mizbeach. It never qualified to get on the Mizbeach. Tosafot asked the question, aren't these two synonymous? The fact that it's disqualified immediately, and the fact that Kedushat Damim disqualify you, are synonymous. That's their whole problem here. The reason is because Kedushat Damim disqualify it immediately. So Tosafot comes up with cases which separate between the two factors, which is, Tosafot says over here that you can have a case where it's Dachui Mi'ikara, and yet it's Kadosh Kedushat HaGuf, and the case where a person comes an apostate, he goes and worships Avodah Zarah, and while he's a worshiper of Azarah, he separates out a Korban. So when he separates out a Korban, that Korban is not ro'oi to go on the Mizbeach because he is an apostate at this point in time. He does tshuva later and then returns. Can he bring that Korban on the Mizbeach? The answer is no, because it was dochoi mi'ikara. From the moment he separated out the animal, it was no good because he was an apostate at the time. He wasn't makdishik dushat damim. He was makdishik dushat guf. He wanted to put that animal, and he owns the animal, he wanted to put it on the Mizbeach. Yet it is disqualified. The Rashba gives an example of an animal where you makdish half of it for an Allah, half of it for Shlamim. And again there, it's Kadosh Kedushat HaGuf, yet it's Dachoy Mi Ikara. Or the Ritva brings the case of Bikurim, where you pick the Bikurim and you send them up with a Shaliach. Again, those are cases where it has Kedushat HaGuf, yet it's Dachoy Mi Ikara. So those are examples where you could separate out the Dachoy immediately, where it never became qualified. It's disqualified from the get-go, yet it's talking about Kedushat HaGuf. And Tosafot comes up with cases where you have Kedushat Dichui B'damim, even though it's not Dichui Me'ikara, which is Hefrish Nikeva LePesach. That's the example Tosafot brings. Case where he's Mafrish Nikeva. Pesach only comes from Zecharim, not from Nikevot. You're Mafrish Nikeva LePesach, and then it gives birth to a male. So over there, the female clearly is Dachoy damim, but it's not disqualified immediately because we have a case where if it gives birth to a male, that male could be ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach. So even over here, there's a dichui because it's monetary value. Nevertheless, it's not dachui mikara. It's not disqualified immediately because it can give birth to a zachar. That's what he says here. Below havi dachui mikara, she have lad ra'ui la'kriv. When he gives birth to that male animal can go on the mizbeach. It can end up as a kurban pesach. So it's not dachui mikara, yet it is dachui because it's kedushat damim. But that's an example. Or, boy, the Rashba gives up a case is, he's mafrish damim for a chatat, then becomes apostate, and then returns. So there again, it's a case where it's kedushat damim, and it becomes disqualified. It's not disqualified from the get-go. He was a perfectly good Jew when he was mafrish the damim. So again, there's a way to have kedushat damim be a problem of disqualification even without dachui mikara. And the Ritva gives a case where an Ashir is mafrish an animal for a korban, became poor, and then became an Ashir again. And a korban, which is a korban olah v'yored, where changed by your economic capability, was over there. He was rich, he was mafrish the animal. He became impoverished, so now the animal is nitche, because he can't bring that korban, it's not necessary to bring that korban anymore. He becomes wealthy again, so now he is ready to bring it again. So there you had a case where it was dachoy, kedushat damim, only there was he going to use it for its monetary value to bring it. And it's dachoy, even though it's not dachoy miyakara, because he was rich in the beginning. And it was qualified korban in the beginning, qualified in the end, but disqualified in the middle. So all the rishonim come up with cases where you could separate between these two factors, even though many times they appear together, which is dachoy miyakara and dachoy damim, generally appear or happen simultaneously. Yet there are examples of cases where we can separate between the two factors. All right, bye, Rava. Chetzeich b'chatzi pruta, v'chetzeich b'chatzi pruta. So here he says, listen, I want half of you for half a pruta, and the other half of you for the other half a pruta. Mahu, what's the din there? Kevin damar la chatzi pruta pasko. Do we say because he says half a pruta and half a pruta, the kinyanim are separated, segregated, and then you have a failure here in the kiddushin, both because he's only marrying half of her, but also because he's only giving consideration of half a pruta, and half a pruta doesn't do the job. Odilma monev olechu. Or maybe it's just an accumulated kinyan, which means that I want half of you for half a pruta and the other half for half a pruta. So now I have in total, I have the whole of you for a whole pruta. And now she got a pruta and there is kiddushin. Tosfot over here all qualifies these cases again. And he says here, by the case of chetziach pruta v'chetziach pruta, v'yishlamar, d'avimari b'damar la lashon kiddushin, if he lose the lashon of kiddushin, ein achanami davu pashtu kiddushin b'kula. The kiddushin would have spread to the remainder of her. Tosfot over here says that if he says chetziach mikudishet li bechetzi pruta, and then he does the other half later on, what becomes clear from that situation is that the woman wanted the whole kiddushin, and then we lose the impediment that we mentioned on the previous amud. Is why doesn't the kiddushin spread to the rest of the woman? Because you have dat acheret. She owns the other half, and she doesn't necessarily want to marry the other half to him. But over here, where it becomes clear that she does want to marry the other half to him, then the kiddushin should spread from the half to the other half, even without the second transaction going through. It should work, and the kiddushin should spread. So Tosafot over here uses the same thing that he mentioned on the previous amud, which is, that's only if you lose the lashon of hekdesh, hariyat mikudeshet. If you use the lashon of hariyat mu'uresetli, or chetiech mu'uresetli b'chatzi pruta, then it wouldn't spread because you didn't lose the lashon of kiddusha. So that's what Tosafot does. Playing on what he mentioned on the previous amud, is that kiddushin or the lashon kiddushin is different than the other lashonot. If you say that this is a process like you're suggesting, installment payments, where he's just counting to the final transaction price, then chetziach bepruta, v'chetziach bepruta. It says half of you with the pruta and half of you with the pruta. Mao, what's the din here? Kevin d'amar la bepruta upruta pascha d'milte. Since in each case he used a full pruta, which is sufficient consideration to create the kiddushin, he acquires the half, and then the other half, but they're separate. He acquires the entirety of her. But he say anything done on the same day is considered to be one big transaction. So the difference here is, here the deficit is not in the monetary consideration that's been given, because in each case he gave a pruta. Here the deficit is that he only acquired half the woman. So do we say that each pruta stands alone, and therefore he acquired half the woman and half the woman, and it doesn't work? Or do we say that he acquires half the woman, and we add them together, and he got the whole woman, even though he paid two prutot for her, but he still got the whole woman in the end. So what do we say? That's the Gemara's question. Mahu, what's the din here? Imtim salomar, kol biyomei monei nevelecho. Let us accept that anything is on the same day is considered to be one big transaction. Chetzeich b'pruta yom, v'chetzeich b'pruta l'machar, says I'm marrying half of you today with this pruta, and half of you tomorrow with another pruta, but he says it all up front. It's not that he says it today and says it tomorrow, he says it all up front, but the execution of the transaction is today and tomorrow. Mao, what's the din then? Kevin d'amala machar paska. Since he separates the days, it's as if there's a break in the transaction. Kiddushin matklu hayidna. The kiddushin begin immediately. Megamar lo nigmeru ad lemachar. But they're not finalized, they're not completed until tomorrow. This is like a big, long transaction. It begins today, ends tomorrow, but it's all one big transaction. So now the Gemara doesn't say anything about that. It says, Shnei chetzeich b'pruta. Two halves of you for a pruta. Meaning that I want both halves of you for this pruta. Maho. Hacha vade b'chada zimna ka'amarla. Over here, he's definitely saying it in one shot. Odilma, enisha mitkadesh b'chetzein klal. Or maybe a woman just can't be married in pieces. She can't be half of her and half of her. You need to have the whole of her. Teiku, no resolution. What the teiku references over here depends on how you read the Gemara. We had four cases over here. In two of the cases, the Gemara said, im timtza lomar. So, according to many of the Rishonim, teiku references back to all four cases over here. The Ravid, the Rosh, they all say that. You have suffix kiddushin in all four of these cases. On the other hand, the Rambam, and the Ran, following in the shoes of the Rambam, who says that whenever the Gemara says Imtim Salomar, that's conclusive. That means that the Gemara concluded that case. That means in the first two cases, Imtim Salomar, we concluded that she is Mikudeshet. Because the Gemara says, if you say this, then move along. If it says Imtim Salomar, it means that they already concluded that the previous case is this way. And now let's move on to the next question. So that means that in the first two cases, those are acceptable Kiddushin, because it said Imtim Salomar. If you say it works, let's ask the next question. But the fact that you said, let's say it works, means that the Gemara concluded that it does work. And therefore, according to the Rambam, in the first two cases, Mikudeshet, it's a full-fledged Kiddushin. The Teiku only references to the latter two cases. And then you have to deal with what's the difference between the first two cases and the latter two cases, which is that in the latter two cases, there are two Kinyanim, according to the Rambam. I mean, it's two separate Kinyanim, and that's the failure. Whereas the Gemara views the first two cases as a single kinyan, moneh v'aleich. It's one long transaction. Since it's one kinyan, that's why it works. The latter two are two kinyanim, and that's why there's a safek over there. On the other hand, the other deot say that the first cases were done b'vadachat, and vadachat, we think, maybe overcomes the deficit of the two transactions. The second half of the Gemara says, no, maybe vadachat is not sufficient to overcome that problem. And therefore, once you unwind the concept that bat achat overcomes the deficit of two kinyanim, then it means that all these cases are a safek now, because even though they're all done simultaneously, nevertheless, you have two kinyanim here, and two kinyanim is a safek. And that's why the Ravid and the Rosh are going to believe that all these cases remain a safek. All right, now, next Gemara. Baro bai rova. Dei binotayich l'shnei banai. Your two daughters are going to get married to my two sons, bipruta, with a single pruta. So here you have two fathers get together. Father says, listen, I got two sons to marry off. You got two daughters to marry off. Let's do this in one big transaction. I'm going to give you a pruta. And then with that pruta, we're going to marry the two sons to your two daughters. Okay, so now let's just discuss the nature of the case, because otherwise it doesn't make sense. First of all, as Tosfot points out, the daughters are ktanot. The daughters have to be minors. Because then the father has the right to accept kiddushin on behalf of his daughters, and he's not acting as an agent for the daughters. Because if he's acting as an agent for the daughters, then he's an agent A and agent B. Even though he is one person who's an agent, he still is a separate agent for each one of the daughters. And therefore, this case wouldn't make sense. So that's number one. So the first thing I have to say is that his daughters are minors, and therefore he is accepting on behalf of his daughters because he can act as a single individual for both parties here without any separation. Number two is that by the boys, they have to be of age, otherwise they can't generate kiddushin. So it has to be a case where they appointed their father, or they granted their father the right to be their agent. So now the father, as the agent of the sons who are grown, goes to the father of the two daughters of these minor daughters who he can generate, or he can accept kiddushin on behalf of his daughters, says, here, take this pruta, and I want my two sons now, who I'm representing, to marry your two daughters who you have the right to accept kiddushin for. With that pruta, what's the question? Mao, bata notenu mikabela zinan. Do we go after the grantor and the recipient? Vayikra Mamona. And therefore there's a pruta. A pruta went from the father of the boys to the father of the girls. And therefore there was one transaction in a sense of kiddushin that went through. And a pruta is sufficient over here to generate the kiddushin. Again, the father who represents the two daughters is not coming as a shliach. He's coming as an individual party who can receive and establish the kiddushin. So since he's a single party, maybe one pruta is enough over here. Odilma batra diduazlina. Or do we go after the parties getting married? And over here, there are two marriages, and that would require a minimum of two prutot. And we don't have that here. Teiku. Again, it's unresolved. This situation, or this type of kiddushin would be unresolved. Tosafot points out that we have to know which son is marrying which daughter. Because otherwise, then it's a kiddushin, she didn't know the intent of beyond, it wouldn't be a good kiddushin. As we hear that they agree which son is going to marry which daughter, they just do the whole thing as a single package. Baira papa. Bitcha uparatcha bepruta. I want to acquire your daughter and your cow for a single pruta. Mao, what do we say? Mi aminan bitcha bechatsi pruta, uparatcha bechatsi pruta. Do we say that the transaction works like this? Half a pruta for the daughter, half a pruta for the cow, and therefore there's no kiddushin over here because you don't have sufficient consideration for the kiddushin. Odoma bitcha bepruta, that the way he's saying it is, listen, your daughter, here's the pruta for the kiddushin, paratcha bemishicha, and your para I'm going to acquire by the kinyan mishicha. Or in other words, it's going to get thrown into the package over here. Teiko, we leave that unresolved because why would you think in that manner? Because generally a para is not acquired through monies. Again, mamon is not the way to create a kinyan over a para, even though according to Rabbi Yochanan it does work, midat Torah. Nevertheless, midat Rabbanan, we acquire a kinyan mishicha because of the problems that come about, which we've discussed in the past, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses, which is if we don't demand a kinyan mishicha, it could be a situation where the money acquires something on your behalf and it's still in the seller's property, and he'll let it go to waste or get burnt up because he doesn't care anymore, it's not his. So in order to prevent that problem, we require a kinyan mishicha. So that's why you would think maybe over here the puta is only going towards the kiddushin and not towards the para. Teiko, we don't know. By Ravashi, bitcha bekarkacha beputa. So now he creates a case where both items can be acquired through kesef. Kesef works to create kiddushin. Kesef works to buy karka, to buy property. Mao, bitcha bechatzi puta bekarkacha bechatzi puta. Again, do we say that the way that the transaction is developed here is half the puta is going to go to getting generating kiddushin, half the puta to buy the property? Or maybe your daughter I'm acquiring with the puta here, which would be sufficient for the kiddushin. And then I'm going to acquire the karka by exerting control over the property. Teiku, again, an unresolved issue. How gavra the aktish bishirai? There was this individual who got married with using silk. Rabba amar lo tzricha shuma. You do not have to assess the value of the silk. Rav Yosef amar tzricha shuma. Rav Yosef says you do need an assessment of the value of the silk. If he said to her, listen, that's what Rashi says, marry me with me with whatever is here, that they don't need an assessment because, of course, they meet the minimum standard of a pruta. The silk, you can see, is more than a pruta, and it works fine. So if he never defined the value of what he's giving her, he simply says, whatever it is, I want to get married to you. Whatever the value of this silk is, I want to get married. It works. Everybody agrees you don't have to assess it because he never made any declaration of its value. And it clearly clears the minimum threshold, which is a pruta. So it goes, it works. If he gave her silk and he says, listen, this is worth 50 prutot or 50 zuz, velo shavu chamshin, and they're not worth 50, halo shovel, then it's not worth 50. So then there's nothing to discuss over here because he didn't live up to what he said he was going to do. Keep lige, where's the machloka? Damar chamshin, hishavu chamshin. The case where he says it's worth 50, and it turns out it is worth 50. Rabbi Amar lo tzricha shuma, davishavu chamshin. You don't have to have an assessment of its value because it's worth 50. He gave it as 50 and it's worth 50. Rav Yosef Amar tzricha shuma. Since a woman is not an expert in the assessment of the value of the item, she does not have reliance, she doesn't have gemirat hadat to go through the transaction because she says, I'm not sure if it's worth 50. So her kiddushin or the acceptance of the silk is almost al tnai that we get it assessed and it's really worth 50. Because even if it is worth 50, I'm not there until I know for sure it's worth 50. Because I can't assess it, and I can't tell you whether it's really worth 50 or close to 50. I need an assessor. Until the assessor comes into the picture, Rav Yosef says, there is no marriage over here. Igadam, right? Some say, Beholdu nami plige, that even when he makes no declared valuation of the item, you still need an assessment. Rav Yosef Amar, Shova Kesef, Hariyuki Kesef, money equivalents, or something that is worth the same or has monetary value, that has the same din as Kesef. Ma Kesef Dekaitz, just like money has finite valuation, because you know exactly by the coins or the money that you're giving exactly what you're getting. Af Shove Kesef Nami Dekaitz. So too, when you give a money equivalent, it has to have a fixed value. You can't just hand something and say, whatever it's worth, we're having Kiddushin. Just like when you give money to generate the Kiddushin, we know exactly how much you gave. So too over here, when you give a object that is acting in place of money, you need to know how much it's worth. Amar Yosef, Minayin Minala, and how can I prove to you that that's the case? The Tanya, the Brayta says, Mikesef Miknato. Bekesef hu nikne, venu nikne b'tvua b'kelim. It says that through Kesef, you can acquire, or he can acquire himself, by an Eved Ivri, it's talking about, that you can acquire him through Kesef, but that works by money, it doesn't work by tvua b'kelim. Hai tvua b'kelim heichidami. What's the exact scenario here of this grain and utensils that are being used? Ilay medulo maknu b'hu klal, if you're telling me that they can't be used for acquisition at all, yeshiv gula toa marachmano. Over there it says that you give back the money in order to attain his freedom. So there you see that l'rabot shava kesef kekesef, to teach you that cash equivalents have the same din as kesef. So that means that tvua kelim, whatever you give him in order to acquire his freedom, doesn't matter. As long as you get to the equivalent value, that's fine. So the fact that tvua kelim can be used is included in the pasuk. By the way, that's what Rashi says over here. Gabi kiddushim kesef tiv. B'shava kesef itrava kekesef. And money equivalents are included. He brings it from this pasuk of Yeshiv the Gulato, which is by an Eved Ivri. So how do you get from Eved Ivri to the woman? That's what Tosfot asked back on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. How do you know that Shava Kesef works in Kiddushin? He says we learn it out from Eved Ivri. And that's what Rashi is saying over here, that we learn it out from Eved Ivri, that we see by Eved Ivri that Kesef should have been the only vehicle, yet Shava Kesef works. Nevertheless, so too, by Kiddushin, where Kesef is the only vehicle, Shava Kesef will work. It says here, Kesef Miknato, explicitly says Kesef, despite the fact we include Shava Kesef, so too, by Kiddushin. So, Ve'i delayt behu Shava Pruta, if the Tvua and Kelim are not worth a Pruta, Ma'iriya Tvua Kelim, then why does Tvua and Kelim a failure in the transaction? Avilu Kesef Nami, even if there was money there, the transaction would fail because it's less than a Pruta. El alav de'it behu Shava Pruta. But it must have a value that's above a Shava Pruta. But came into low kaitse, low. Because they're not exact in value. I mean, we can't determine their proper value. There's a failure in the transaction. A failure not because they're not worth that amount. Not because they don't cross the minimum threshold of a Pruta. But simply because we don't know their value. People will not enter into a transaction except something as compensation. Even though seemingly it gets over the threshold of compensation because they want to know exactly how much they're getting. And until they know, Shove Kesef is only Shove Le Kesef when it has a monetary value assigned to it. Vidach, and the other one being Rabba over here, says, Achikamar, B'Torat Kesef Hu Nikneh, Eina Nikneh B'Torat Tavua B'Kelim. You can acquire him through Kesef, through money, with the process of money, but not the process of Tavua B'Kelim. Umay Nihu, what is the process of Tavua B'Kelim? Chalipin, that you're making a kinyan chalipin. So that is what it's saying here. An Eved Ivri can be acquired through kesef. He cannot be acquired through a kinyan chalipin. That's what Tosfot says over here. Eved Ivri nikne bechalipin, lokona atzmo bechalipin. An Eved Ivri cannot be acquired through chalipin, and he cannot acquire himself or regain his freedom through chalipin, which is not true by an Eved Kanani, as Tosfot points out. And Eved Kanani can be acquired through Chalipin and can gain his freedom through Chalipin. Oh, the Rav Nachman, Damar Peirot Lo Avdei Chalipin. According to the Rav Nachman, who says that fruits or food cannot act as a Kinyan Chalipin, a Kinyan Sudar, Ma'ik of the Meimer, because here you mentioned Tvua and Kelim. So maybe Kelim can work as a Kinyan Chalipin, but Tvua cannot work as a Kinyan Chalipin. Then how are you going to explain this? Hello, Lam Delet Behu Shave Pruta. It's a case where it's worth less than a Pruta. Then why is the example brought here of Tvua and Kelim that were less than a pruta? Even money less than a prusha of a pruta also doesn't work. Lo mi bayi kamar. That's exactly what it's saying. It's saying not only this. Lo mi bayi kesef. In the case of kesef, the ibe sheva pruta in ilo lo lo. If it's worth a pruta, yes. If it's worth less than a pruta, no. Aval tvua kelim. But by grains and utensils, ema mitikav karva hanatayu gomar amakne nafshe. That maybe because it is readily usable and much more available to hana from it, maybe he will give into the acquisition, even though it's worth less than a pruta. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that. That even though these items are worth less than a pruta, but maybe we can make up for that deficit by saying that their hana'ah is more readily available, and that makes up the deficit, and he has gemir to that, even though they're worth less than a pruta. Kamash Malon, that's not the case. Of course, kesef doesn't work. You don't have to tell me kesef. But even Tzvah and Kelim won't work over here, even though you might have had a Havamina, that it should work over here. We don't say it works. By the way, that's a terminology that's used in other places. What's Mekaivra HaNatayu, if you remember the story in Tanit, where the individual who come, the Rabbanan, come to him to daven on their behalf to have Geshem. So he and his wife go upstairs to daven for Geshem, and the rain comes. But when the rain comes, the clouds gather on the side that his wife is davening, not on the side that he's davening. Right. So the Rabbanan ask him, how come your wife's tefillah was answered first, or why does the Geshem come on her side first? He says, because I give tzedakah to the aninim, I give them money. My wife, when she gives tzedakah to the aninim, she gives them tefuah, or she gives them kemach, or she gives them challah, the mekarva hainatayu, which is much more readily available for them to use, and therefore her tzedakah is greater than my tzedakah, because she gives them items that they can use immediately. It's exactly what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that possibly the fact that you give an object that is more readily available or usable has enhanced hana'ah to it. And that enhanced hana'ah maybe can make up for the deficit of a pruta. Mashmalan, that we don't say that. So therefore, Rav Yosef brings a proof from Eved Ivri that when you have Sheva Kesef Kekesef, it works only if the Sheva Kesef has a fixed value like the Kesef. And that's why he says the Tvua and Kelim don't work over here. Even though they're worth more than a pruta, they don't work because you haven't assigned them a value. If you assign them a value, they would work. Rabba, on the other hand, says it has nothing to do with that, because Rabba believes that the Sheva Kesef does not have to have a fixed value. Rather, he says the failure here is that they're worth less than a pruta. If they're worth less than a pruta, you could have told me about Kesef as well. He says, no, we don't need to tell you about Kesef. Kesef is obvious when it's less than a pruta. But these items, when they're less than a pruta, you thought they might be able to be used because they're mekarve hanatayu, and that'll make up for the deficit, kamash malan, that it cannot be used for a kinyan. Again, on the interim, we saw that Rab also says that kinyan chalipin does not work to acquire an Eved Ivri, and maybe that was the deficit over here. That second answer that he gave was according to Rav Nachman, who says that fruits or items, food items, cannot be used in a kinyan chalipin, so that can't be the answer why it fails over here. The failure has to be that it's less than a pruta. And that failure is, even though there's hana'ah, it still doesn't work. All right, we're going to stop here. 17 lines down on Chet Amud Aleph.